thinks you are just a little girl. This may be your best chance for freedom." The final click of the key, she swung the barred door open. She smiled at me. "You don't have to be afraid. Look what I have." She opened a little pouch and shook something out into her hand. "Look," she whispered. "Candy." The pieces looked like gleaming buttons of red and pink and yellow. She took one and put it in her mouth. "Mmm, delicious. Like a cherry, but sweet as honey." She took a pink one between her thumb and forefinger. "Try it." She advanced on me, holding it out. I stepped sideways to avoid being cornered. "Take it," she said in a breathy voice. I held out my hand, and she set the candy into it. "Eat it," she whispered. "You'll like it." "Is it poisoned or drugged?" Her eyes widened. "Didn't you just see me eat one? Pretend to be stupid, stupid." I nearly laughed out loud. Instead, I pretended to put the candy into my mouth. "Well?" she demanded. Her whisper was not as soft. She was exasperated. I nodded, pouching one cheek out. "Good," I said around my tongue. Her smile was relieved. "See? I am nothing to be afraid of. If you come with me, very quietly, I will give you more candy." She crooked her finger at me, beckoning. I assumed my most puzzled expression. "Where are we going?" She barely hesitated. "To make things right. Poor little child. I've come to tell you it was all a mistake. No one meant to hurt you. It was all a misunderstanding. You should not have been taken from your home. So now we must make it right. Come with me." "But where?" She backed toward the open door, and I followed her. In the corridor, she closed the door to my cell, softly. "It's a surprise," she added. "Surprise," said the black man, and laughed quietly. She turned toward his cell, her face contorted with hate. "Why aren't you dead yet?" "Because I'm alive," he announced with no effort to lower his voice. He laughed aloud like rolling thunder. "Why aren't you dead yet?" "Because I'm smarter than you. I know when to stop. I know when to cease being a problem." She steered me away, her hand heavy on my shoulder. At that, his laughter boomed. "You think you know so much. You've seen so many possible futures, and you think you can pick and choose. And you have for so long, for so many generations, you've chosen what you thought was best. Not best for the world, not best for people, best for you and those who serve you. You chose what would give you the greatest wealth, the most comfort, the most power." His words followed us. Other prisoners were waking, staring through the bars of their cells as we passed. "It's nothing. He's mad. Go back to sleep." Symph spoke the words through gritted teeth, keeping her voice low. "But the world spins on, and there is a destined path. You can only tip it so far before it writes itself. It's all inevitable now. I see, but you refuse to look." He sounded mad to me. Perhaps he was. How long could you keep a man caged before he went insane? We reached the door at the end of the corridor. "Open it," she snapped at me, and I did. We passed into the dimness of the little room. Descending the stairs meant that she loosened her grip on my shoulder. I thought of darting away. Not yet. I'd wait until there was a choice of direction to flee in. But I took the steps faster, and the only grip she could keep was on the loose fabric of my shirt. If I needed to, I could tear free of her. Not yet. We went down and down, and then down again. Where are we going? I asked her. To see some friends, she replied. They have the candy. The first two landings we passed were open to corridors I recognized. They led to the rooms full of scrolls and books. When we reached the ground floor, she led me down a wide hall. Door after door we passed, but at last she paused before one. She took out a ring of brass keys, selected one, and opened a tall door. The room we entered was small. She led me past a table and chairs to another locked door. Hush, she warned me. More steps, another locked door, and down yet again. She unlocked a final door and motioned that I should enter. I stood still. The room beyond the locked door smelled bad, a cross between the low tide in Chaleshead and a dirty butcher's stall. I didn't want to enter. I should have run from her when I had the chance. It's a trap! In we go, she said brightly, putting a hand in the middle of my back and shoving me into the room. She pulled the door shut behind us. I moved quickly away from her into a room with walls and floor of stone. The carrion smell and the stink of feces grew stronger. I wrapped my arms around myself, for the room was chill and dank. There were fat oil lamps on shelves at intervals on the walls, but their wicks were low and the light illuminated little more than the lamps themselves. I heard something move, and the soft clinking of chain. I squinted and saw a barred door, and beyond it, a huddled shape. Did she intend to confine me in a cell down here? She'd have to catch me first. I put more distance between us. Come back, Bee. Remember, candy? Yes, she truly thought me that stupid. Good. Wolffather's response was terse. Find a weapon. Kill her. Escape. Kill her? I could barely frame the thought. I can't. You must. That smell is old blood. Lots of it. She brought you to a place of bloodshed, of killing. I glanced over my shoulder, gave Simph a vacuous smile, and said, I want to find the people with the candy. She was faster than I had expected. In the second I glanced away from her, she crossed the distance between us and seized my upper arm in a tight grip. Don't fight her. Not yet. Wait until you know you can kill. My eyes were adjusting to the dimness. There were other cells. In one, there was someone on the floor, sprawled and still. She walked me past a stone table with metal rings, set into the sides and edges. It smelled of blood and old piss. There was a bank of layered benches. Oh, I had seen this place in Vindaliya's mind. Here they had tormented beloved. The dim light hinted at ugly stains on the table and on the floor around it. I felt ill. I feigned a stumble, and her hand clenched tighter. I dropped to my knees, testing her strength. She kept hold of me, but now I knew. She was fast, but not as strong as Dwalia. If I had to, I could break her grip. Not yet. Bee, don't pull away. Soon we will have the candy. It's so delicious. She had moved into the dim pool of light of one of the lamps. It was like a big teapot, with the wick poking out of its spout and two handles like ears to pick it up. She reached up to lift it from its shelf. She did not want to let go of me, so she had to lift it by one handle. It was so heavy that her hands shook and the flame on the wick flared up as the oil slopped toward it. She set it on the floor with the scrape of heavy pottery on stone. She poked at the wick. The flame grew taller, and it lit a wider circle around us.
Did you bring her?
Vindaliya's voice.
Did you get the keys?
That was Dwalia. I shrank back into the darkness.
Hush! Yes to both!
Simph laughed softly. The keys I've had for years. My heart thundered in my chest. Had I missed my chance, what hope did I have against three of them? The brighter light reached into the cell and I feared to look. But Dwalia huddled on a bunk, her hands trapped between her knees. I saw her fever-bright eyes and chapped mouth. Infection had set into her lacerated flesh. Vindelire was in the same cage, hunkered on the floor. He'd taken a beating. His eyes were blackened, his lower lip split. I could see the chain that bound him tightly to a ring set in the cold stone, barely two links between his neck and the flooring. How his body must ache from that forced crouch. His only alternative would be to lie on the cold, filthy floor. Simph's slender fingers bit deep into my arm. "Pick up the lamp," she ordered me. I stooped to obey her, but she did not let go of my arm. The lamp was as big as a milk bucket and heavy. I wrapped my arms around it with the flame away from me and lifted. I did not like how the flame leapt and stuttered. "This way," she said, and pulled me toward the cell. I concentrated on breathing calmly and keeping the lamp steady. It was designed to be left on a shelf, not carried. I wondered how long I could hold it. Weapon, weapon. There was no weapon. I could break free of her and run, but she had locked the door. Was there another way out? Likely it was locked as well. I needed a plan, but I had no plan. I wanted my father desperately. He would know what to do. The night we had burned the messenger's body, he had thought it all through in just a few minutes. What would he do now?
Stop thinking about doing. Just be ready to do.
I could not imagine more useless advice. Simph had chosen a key on the brass ring and was turning it in the lock. Break away now? No. She would unlock the others, and they would pursue me throughout this chamber. I did not even know how big the room was, but they probably knew every nook and cranny. Simph pushed the door open, tucked the ring of keys into her belt, and then reached into her shirt and took something out. It was a dark cylinder, a container of some sort. She held it up. And I was able to obtain this as well, at great risk to myself, not to mention my loss of dignity in seducing a foreign sentry. You know how closely Capra guards her quarters. When he wakes tomorrow from his long hours of sleep, I imagine he will face the headsman. But it was worth it. Do you know what is in here? She dangled it before them as she smiled her red-lipped smile. It's serpent essence. Vindelire's head lifted and twisted grotesquely. It was both pathetic and terrifying to see him become such a vessel of need. Dwalia looked outraged.
You said you'd given us the last of it, that there was no more. If I had had that before...
I had no more, Simph snapped. No one knows all that Capra has hoarded of treasures and magic, greedy old hog that she is. And she tried to keep this girl to herself. Her hand became a clamp on my arm as she tugged me into the cell. She kicked the cell door closed behind us. She glared at Vindelire. She had better be what you say she is. You need to prove it. Prove that the risks I've taken were worth it. If you can't, I leave you chained here and let Capra do as she will with both of you. She spoke as if I were a dog on a leash, too stupid to understand what she said, as if Vindelire were a block of wood. Stand there. Hold the lamp. She turned her back on me and spoke to Dwalia. I shall let Vindelire have it all. Then we shall see if he speaks truth. See whether she is or is not the unexpected son from the dreams. She gave a dismissive laugh and stared down at the chained man. Vindelire's mouth was ajar, his lower lip trembling and wet with saliva. She regarded him as if he were an ugly dog, and did not address him as she said, Time to use him, Dwalia. Time to take the reins or give them up. I gave you my promise. Help me rise, and you rise with me. That was a promise your pale woman never kept to you, but I will, if Vindelire is truly as useful as you say he is, and if this girl is the prize you said you could win for me. She had let go of my shoulder. Now she turned to the door to lock it. As she took the ring of keys from her belt, I tipped the lamp, splashing her back with the hot oil. I did it with no forethought. Doing, not thinking. The smell of a pinewood forest warmed the room. The fire on the wick burned taller, and some of the spilled oil on the outside of the lamp flared into flame. I thrust the lamp at her, wick first, as she exclaimed in anger and began to turn to face me. The lamp was a terrible weapon, one that might work or might not do anything. Flames licked up the fat side of the pot. I pushed it against Simpf, against the fabric wet with oil. The fire made a sound like someone blowing out a candle, and the loose cloth of her shirt back flared into flames. The fire leapt up, scorching her hair. It writhed and curled with a terrible stink. Screaming, she aimed a wild slap at me. Instead, it knocked the lamp from my hands, and it shattered into shards on the floor, spilling the rest of the oil. The wick fell, and suddenly the puddle of oil became a flaming wall. I leapt back from it, but Simpf stepped in it as she twisted, vainly slapping at the back of her clothes and hair. Vindelire was wailing, and Dwalia cursing me. But they were chained, and Simpf was not. I would deal with her first. Stooping, I seized the biggest shard of lantern and slashed at her. It cut her arm, a long, shallow gash. She grabbed at it, and it cut her hand. But her clothing was well ablaze now, fiery fragments of it spinning off into the air, and she suddenly had no thought for me. She stepped back from the flaming oil on the floor, but the falling bits of burning cloth ignited her wet footprints. She shrieked and began slapping at her clothes with both hands. The brass ring of keys and the long tube of serpent spit went flying. The keys jangled as they struck the floor, but the tube of spit shattered. Vindelire gave a howl of despair and lunged at it like a dog after a flung bone. The chain around his neck would not let him go far, but he crabbed in a circle around his tether, reaching for the puddle of slime with his hands. Vindelire threw himself against his restraints, lunging to reach the spilled potion, ignoring the flailing, flaming woman and Dwalia's angry cries. I'd failed. My shard of lamp was too small to do any serious damage. Simpf would be burnt, but alive, and angry. Then I saw the long splinter from the spit cylinder. It glittered, black and gleaming silver, longer than my hand, long enough to stab deep. I dropped my shard, leapt toward it, and snatched it up. It was sharp, as were the broken bits in the puddle of serpent spit. I cut my bare feet. I cut my hand. It didn't hurt. I looked at the blood welling on my hand. I felt queasy, dizzy, and yet full of stillness. Blood seeped from the gash on my palm. It dripped, but the drops fell very slowly to the floor. I saw exactly where each drop would fall. Something was happening. I wasn't sure what it was. A deafening quiet welled up in me, and all sound was far away. The moment filled me. I was completely aware of everything that was happening around me. Simpf danced her fire dance. I saw the moving tip of every flame and knew where it would lick her. Vindelire strained toward the slowly spreading puddle of spit, patting his hand in the fluid, not caring that he mixed it with filth from the stone floor. He drew his hand back to his face and licked his palm and fingers. White showed all around his eyes. Dwalia was shouting commands at him.
"Try to reach the keys! Forget the serpent potion! Get the keys! Kill that bitch! Simpf, tear off your clothes! Come to where I can reach you!"
"Those and a dozen other requests," she cried. No one listened to her. I had the splinter in my hand still, its sharp edge in my cut. Abruptly, it hurt. It burned. I had wanted to do something with this. Kill. I was going to kill Simpf, and then Vindelire, and then Dwalia. How? Then the magic surged into me. I felt it race into my body from the cuts on my feet and from the cut on my hand. It burned me with ecstasy. I quivered with pleasure, shivers running up my spine, goose flesh pimpling on my arms and legs. I laughed out loud. I loved the sound of my laughter. I roared with laughter and focused myself on Simpf. I could see her so clearly, and see, too, all the things that might happen to her. She might collapse to the ground and her clothes continue to burn.
She might flee and crash into the bars or carry her flaming body to Dwelia's bunk. But most likely of all was what happened next, for I willed it so. I timed my motion to the movement I knew she would make. At the instant she threw back her head to scream, I stepped in with my shard and cut her throat. I stepped back before the flames could catch me. It was so easy. I knew exactly how the flames would move and precisely where it was safe to step. I knew how firmly to press and how quickly to draw the shard across her throat. Vindelire had been right. Once I was on the true path, all became easy and so clear. I no longer needed the shard. I knew that Simph would die of burns and blood loss. I saw some futures where I held onto the shard and it cut my hand badly. There were far fewer futures where I needed it to defend my life. In only a few did Dwelia possess it. A few were too many. I tossed it into the far corner of the cell as Simph fell, her screams now choked with blood. She sprawled and clutched uselessly at her leaking neck. Her feet were in the burning puddle. She kicked them. I turned from watching her. I already knew what happened next. She was finished. I knew, too, what I should do next. With every action I took, the best path grew broader and clearer. This was my true path. It was nothing like the one the servants had envisioned. I stooped to set my cut hand on the surface of the puddle. I drew breath and felt the magic roar into my blood. I felt it join my other magic, the rightful magic of my far-seer blood. The magics twined and danced in me, red and black and silver. I knew the futures, and I knew the past. And I knew I could command people to create the future I desired. I felt Vindelire's power wash over me like a cold wave, a shallow wave.
"Unchain us," he suggested.
I saw his eyes widen as I slowly shook my head. "That does not happen," I told him gently.
"Force her!"
Dwelia barked at him, and this time his suggestion was not a wave, but a solid slap against all my awareness. It stung, but did not stun. I thought of a little joke. I stooped slowly and picked up the ring of keys. I looked at them. Slack-faced, I held them out toward Dwelia. She lunged. I dropped them, just out of reach. She struggled to get to them, strangling herself against her iron collar.
"Unlock our chains,"
Vindelire repeated the words as a command. But I had found my shields and I cut through his feeble suggestion as a ship cuts through water. I smiled at him and sidled closer to Simph's unmoving body. I found the dagger at her belt. Its decorated sheath was scorched. I pulled the dagger free of it and put it through my sash. A real weapon. One my father had taught me to use. It felt good. In her pocket I found the other keys on their silver leashes. Those were mine, too.
"Vindelire!"
Dwelia rasped at him, her voice hoarse from her bruised throat. He tried. I felt him shape his power and thrust it at me. It was like a buffet of wind. I smiled at him. I recalled how my father had pushed me away when I had felt the touch of his magic. I imitated that as I looked at Vindelire and said, "Stop that." He dropped limply to the floor. Only whites showed in his slitted eyes, and his body trembled twice before it was still. "Is he dead?" I heard myself ask aloud.
"Guards! Guards! Help! Help!"
I had heard Dwelia roar with fury and shout with anger. This was the first time I'd heard her voice ascend to a crescendo of terror. It took a moment for me to realize that I was what she feared. I stood outside the reach of her chains and knew a moment of panic. Guards would come, and I'd be captured, beaten or killed. "No. Stop shouting," I said to her. "Be quiet." And she was, her mouth hanging open. I listened. The dying flames on the oil puddle and on Simph's body whispered softly. I heard no guards running, no doors unlocking. Nothing. Oh, of course Simph would have arranged for them to be away from their posts. I smiled at the work she had done for me. In that moment of silence, my body shouted at me. I had cuts on the soles of both feet, The cut on my hand stung. I looked at it. It was like a smiling mouth carved across my palm, and it was sending a smooth sheet of blood sliding from my hand. With my other hand, I pushed it closed and held it. Oh, I could do better than that. I felt the severed edges of flesh touch and recall each other. They belonged together. Be together, I suggested to them, and my body listened. I could almost see the fine net my body wove, like a spider's web, to knit my flesh back together. I limped away from the puddle of serpent spit and the dying flames on the oily pool. I sat down on the floor and regarded my bloody feet. I plucked a shard of glass from my heel. Blood followed it. One by one, I closed each cut. When I stood, I could feel that my feet were newly healed. They hurt, but the sharp jab of pain was gone.
There is no time for this now. Kill her. Flee.
Shh. I hushed Wolffather. This was no forest, but a dungeon in a stronghold. Would I need Dwalia to escape? I considered her.
You were never the unexpected son, she whispered.
So I told you over and over, and you still ruined my life, took me from my home, killed my friends.
You are the destroyer, and we brought you here.
I was surprised. Her words seemed to shimmer with light and truth. I was the destroyer? My mind leapt back to the forest and to overheard whispers from Repin and Alaria. I was that? I am, I said. As soon as I acknowledged it, that path unrolled before me. I knew what I would do. It did not feel like a choice as I took the knife from my sash. It was a thing I did in so many possible futures that not doing it did not seem possible. I took a slow step toward her. I am the destroyer. You not only brought me here, you created me. I was unlikely, almost impossible. Then you came to my home. Oh, no. I stared at her and saw the path she had left behind her. It was like a snail's track on a clean, swept floor. No. It began years before then. You began to make me when you tormented beloved. She stared at me, her eyes wide. I stepped forward, my knife ready. She slapped my hand hard and the knife fell. It clattered on the floor, exactly as I had known it must, making precisely the sound I had expected. I didn't need a knife. I smiled at her. I pushed into her mind as if it was soft butter and I a hot blade. I spoke my word. Softly. Die. And she did. She occupied a space in the world. Then she didn't. I felt the world close up around where she had been. The part of her that had been a living thing became a prelude to dirt. Every future that might have sprung from Dwalia living suddenly shriveled and vanished from the great tapestry of the future. Other gleaming threads writhed in to take their places. They were the futures made possible by her death at this moment. The moment she stopped living, her body began to collapse into something else. I stared at that sack of flesh, wondering how it had held her, and what exactly Dwalia had been, not the thing that was left behind. So, that was death. I considered that as I gathered up the brass ring of keys, and then Simph's knife. I looked at Vindelire. Tremors were now running over him, jiggling his cheeks and making his eyeballs twitch. I thought of ending him quickly, and decided I wouldn't. I was still coming to an awareness of what I had done to Dwalia. And to Simph? I had not felt her death that way. Was it because I'd had a small tie to Dwalia from attempting to manipulate her? Or was it the taint of serpent spit in my flesh? I feared what I might feel if I killed Vindelire, for we had had a bond of sorts. I left him to die by himself. Simph had never locked the cell door. I walked out of it, thought for a moment, and then tossed the brass ring of keys to the floor. I left that door closed, but unlocked. Let them puzzle about that. My mind moved faster than the wind before a squall. I could flee. They would hunt me through the halls and rooms, and they would find me, for I did not know any way to escape from it. They would find me with Simph's knife and her keys. They would see the stains of oil and serpent slime on my clothes. They would know me for what I was, an assassin, like my father before me, the destroyer from their dreams. They would find me, and they would kill me. I didn't want to die. Wolf-father spoke.
For now, hide your true self. Be what they think you are.
My true self? I handled that thought reluctantly.
What they have made you.
He sounded both sad and proud.
The feather hammered into a blade.
I hurried now, for I could not tell how much time had passed. I left the cell and the ugly table and foul smell behind me. I closed the door. I went back the way we had come. When I reached the main floor, I recalled carefully how Capra had led me through the stronghold. I returned to the washing court and was pleased to find clean garments identical to the ones that I had soiled still hanging on the drying lines. I took what I needed and re-spaced the hanging garments on the laundry lines to cover up my theft. I splashed my hands and feet clean and dried them on my dirty clothes. I rolled my soiled garments up into as small a bundle as I could manage and buried them in one of the flower beds. Then I climbed the stairs to the cells where they had held me. I moved as softly as a ghost as I opened the door and entered the hall. The lamps were out. Only the stars and moon looked down on me. The guard was nowhere in sight. Doubtless that was Simp's arrangement, but now it worked to my advantage. I filled my thoughts with sleepiness and slipped past the few occupied cells. No one stirred. Fitting and turning each leashed key was more difficult than I had expected. I had not realized there would be a set order to them. Luck aided me on my third try. I entered and closed the door as quietly as I could manage. It was harder to lock it from inside, and I was sweating before I discovered that the order of the keys to lock was the opposite of unlocking them. I had both a set of keys and a dagger to hide in my sparsely furnished cell. Inside the thin mattress was my only option. I cut the seam just enough to allow me to insert both. I lay down on the mattress and closed my eyes. I could not find the way to sleep. The serpent spit magic coiled strangely through my body and my mind. I could not calm myself.
So, no Simph.
The black voice reached me quietly from the next cell. I held my breath. He would think I was asleep.
You killed, then. I am so sorry.
I closed my eyes and was very still. The serpent magic twisted through me like a parasite in my belly. I felt it mingling with my Farseer magic. For a terrifying instant, I could feel Prilcop in the cell next to me. I knew there were six other prisoners on this level, and that one of them was pregnant. I felt my magic go reaching, reaching, reaching. I slammed my mind shut. If I reached out, who might reach in? I doubted Vindelai would be the only one they had dosed with serpent spit. I would be small and hard as a nut. I would be still as a stone. I made all things still within me. To my surprise, tears still leaked through my lashes and trickled down the side of my face. I did not weep for Simph or Dwalia. I wept for fear of what I had become.
Chapter 28. Unsafe Harbor.
This dream does not belong here. It isn't an important dream, except to me. I only write it down here because I want to keep it forever, for myself. In the dream, I am working in the herb garden with my mother. The sky is blue and the sun is out. But it is early in the day, so it is pleasantly warm, not hot. We crawl along the rows on each side of her lavender beds. She has strong hands. When she grips a weed and pulls, it comes up with a long white root. I am trying to help her weed, but I am just pulling off the top leaves. She stops me and gives me a little trowel. It is worse than useless to do things halfway, Bee, for then you think the work is done, But someone must come behind you later to do it all over again. Even if you must work much harder and get less done, it is better to do the whole task the first time. Then she showed me how to push the trowel into the earth and pop up the weed I was not strong enough to pull. I woke up with the sound of her voice in my ears. It was so real, but the peculiar part is that even though it was exactly something my mother would say to me, I have no memory of such a day. I have drawn here my mother's hands, strong and brown, as she draws the weed from the earth, root and all.
Dream Journal of B. Farcia. My foolish choice, often made, is that I do not sleep well and long on the night before a momentous task. A harsh dream of a rabbit screaming in a trap stirred me to groggy awareness. The feel of the ship had changed. Sometime in the night we had anchored. I'd slept through that. I had finally mastered the art of getting out of a hammock, and even in the dark I managed it well enough. I could hear Lance snoring and Purr's childish breathing. My head still felt heavy with sleep, and I had no idea how much time had passed. The below-decks lantern did not cast light so much as destroy the total darkness. I groped for my boots, pulled them on, and found the ladder to the deck by touch. I yawned, trying to wake myself more fully. I felt dulled and deadened. On the horizon, there was a promise of light to come. I rubbed my eyes, my body still protesting at being awake. I drifted aft and avoided Althea and Brashen standing close together, looking out not at the city, but at the sea outside the harbour. I found my own quiet place on the railing and stared at Clarys as light grew in the sky. The city was even prettier by dawn, a place of manicured greenery and tidy dwellings of pink and pale green and sky blue. I watched the city begin to wake. I smelled the elusive fragrance of fresh baked bread and watched several small fishing vessels leave the harbour. I saw the tiny figures of a man and donkey cart descend from the gentle hills to the waking city. There was only one large ship in the harbour, her figurehead a carved bouquet. So peaceful. My body longed for more sleep. I blinked my eyes, feeling as if I had dozed off standing there. Our figurehead was as still as if he were truly made of wood. My youthful face stared toward the harbour city and the surrounding low hills. All so peaceful. But likely today, I would bloody my hands. If I had my will, people would die. I would do whatever I must to regain my child. I ventured a tendril of skill. B, Dar's here. I'm coming to find you and take you home. I felt no response from her, but I remained as I was, my mind open and waiting for her. But it was not B who reached me. Thin as a thread, I felt Dutiful's touch, even more faintly, Nettle's. And then, like a hawser following a messenger line, Thick steadied them. He still had the power. Old and achy and grumpy at being woken so early, he still reached across the distance and clasped minds with me.
"Hello, Grandfather."
For a moment, Dutiful's greeting made no sense. Then it did.
"The child is born?"
Nettle's skilling was steady, but her exhaustion leaked through.
"A girl. Queen Eliania is delighted. She has asked for the privilege of naming her. Riddle and I agreed. Hope. Her name is Hope."
Hope. I said the name and felt its virtue rise within me. I did not need to skill words to my daughter. All I felt for her and my new granddaughter flooded through our connection. I felt a rush of goose flesh over my body. "Hope," I said again, and felt it.
"And there is more news."
This was Dutiful, as impatient as a child to share something.
"My queen has been keeping a secret until she felt it was safe to say it. She goes with child, Fitz. Against all odds, I will be a father again. And she has already chosen a name. Boy or girl, our child will be Promise.
Tears stung my eyes, and every hair on my body stood up. His joy surged through all the distance to lift my heart even higher. Yes, babies. Babies everywhere. And we all must wake up so early to talk about them. There was no mistaking Thick's opinion that all of this could have waited for later in the day. I pitied the little man for his aching bones. Wake the cooks, command a joyful feast, pink sugar cakes, gingerbread, and those little spiced meat pies to celebrate, I suggested. Yes. I felt Thick's spirits lift at the prospect. And the little balls of dough, cooked in fat with cherries inside, and brown ale. I cannot be there, Thick, old friend, so perhaps you will set the menu to celebrate my grandchild, and eat my share of it for me. I can do that. More cautiously, can I try holding her? I held my breath. With Nettle's ears, I heard Riddle's reply.
Of course you can! Two hands thick, just like for a puppy. No, hold her close to your body, so she feels safe in your strong arms.
She is warm, like a puppy, and she smells like a new puppy. You are safe with me, baby. She's looking at me. Look at her looking at me. Eliania's voice, fainter to my senses.
She will grow up trusting you.
I wish I could be there. My heart rode with the thought. Do not worry, Fitz. I will be her grandfather until you get home. Thick's offer was so sincere that all I could do was let him feel my gratitude. It came to me that perhaps my odd old friend would be a better grandfather than I could be.
Where are you now?
Dutiful asked. Anchored, just outside the harbor of Clares. Today, I go after B. Emotions, too many to name, simmered in a stew of dread and hope.
Be careful,
Nettle breathed from far, far away.
Be ruthless. Kill them all, and bring their city down around their ears. Bring our bee home to us.
This from Dutiful. He looked down at Nettle's little daughter, then over at the slight swell of Eliania's belly. His father's fury woke.
Destroy the servants. Make them wish they had never heard the word Farsia.
At his naming of me, something huge stirred and rose from the depths of the skill current. It felt like nothing I had ever experienced before. Nettle, Dutiful, and Thick all recoiled.
Walls!
I cautioned them all, but they were already gone. As Thick lost his focus, they had vanished like mist in the morning, leaving me alone in a rising mire of foreign magic. A magic that felt repugnant and wrong, tarnished and foul, as if a child hissed like a snake. Thick and slimy, it rose around me. But my careless moment of reaching out had opened a door into me, and that awareness flowed in and touched me. It was a sloppy outpouring of thoughts. I held myself still and small, tight and hard as a nut. I had been taught to use the skill with purpose and discipline, targeting my thoughts as one might lunge with a sword to skewer an opponent. This was a formless push. There was great strength behind it, but no intent, like having a plow horse lean against you inside a stall. I held still and did not push back.
Farsia, that name.
He groped after me. I was breathlessly still.
I feel you. You are close, aren't you? And something is with you. What is that? Not a man.
The flow of thick magic touched Paragon. The ship jolted to awareness, and a shudder ran through the deck.
Touch me not.
The ship ordered it, and I felt the ship's unease before Paragon put up a wall of his own, the same defense he used to keep his thoughts private from me. The awareness fumbled at him fruitlessly, then came back to me. His power wrapped me, and I was tumbled and shaken as if by a random wave. I could raise no wall against him, for he was already within my mind. His power terrified me, but he seemed to have no idea how to use it. He bumbled blindly in darkness, unable to seize me. I held my stillness and was brusquely dropped as something else caught his attention. I heard the voice that distracted him.
Vindalaya, wake! I have questions for you.
Then a horrified whisper.
What have you done? Symph! Symph! Oh, no! She's dead! What have you done, you wretch? Twalia, too! Killed your mistress, too! Nothing. I did not kill them. No one listens to me. You come here over and over to hurt me, to make me say things that you won't believe. You are here to hurt me again, aren't you, Coltry? You like to hurt me.
Fear hit me a hammer blow that paralyzed me. But it was followed by a surging fury, an outraged hatred, and underlying it in a sick wave, a youngster's hurt at being abandoned. He blasted it out.
Dwalia is dead. Symph is dead. You hurt me and hurt me, and I told you B was bad and had magic and would do terrible things, but you only said I was lying and hurt me more. Now they are dead, and you come to hurt me again. Well, I will hurt you now.
He did not aim it at me. If he had, I would have screamed as loud as Coltry. I still fell helplessly to Paragon's deck as a sidewash of agony hit me. I knew them for what they were. Hot pincers, chains that held me off my feet, tiny blades that wandered over my flesh. I felt him realize his power.
No screaming.
He silenced his target. He was not a swift thinker, but with strength such as he had, it might not matter. He pondered as slowly as an ox cart going up a steep hill. I felt his childish glee as he realized his power.
Coltry, now you love me. You love me more than anything. You are so sad I was hurt. Unchain me. You will get me a healer and bring me food. Good food, like the little whites in the cottages get. You will take me out of here to a nice place with a soft bed, and you will tell Capra and Felody that all I told them is true. B has magic, and B did this. B killed Symph and Dwalia.
I felt a skill-like surge of the utter belief that he forced onto someone else. I had no doubt of the truth he told. He drenched me with certainty until I feared that it would be skill-seared into me. For one terrible instant, I knew that B was dangerous, shared his total conviction that she must die.
Make them believe me. I tried to warn you before, but no one listened to me. Tell them a far-seer is near. He talks of killing all of us, of destroying Clara's, and there are dragons in the harbor. I felt them. I almost saw them. Tell them that, but get me food first.
Pulling free of that entity was like trying to wallow out of a bog. His awareness sucked at me the way mud drags a man's boots and holds him fast. I struggled against a strength that was easily the equal of Thick's at his finest. His mind gripped mine in a disgusting embrace, and suddenly he was peering out of my eyes, smelling and touching and tasting all that I did. I could not raise my walls, and the more I retreated into myself, the more of my senses he claimed as territory. He was on the verge of seizing control of my body and will. I flung myself at him. He had not expected an attack. Had he no walls? He did not. He had widened the bridge between us. I charged over it. I claimed his vision and his other senses. I stared up at a fellow with his face disguised in white paint and powder, clad all in green, the color of swamp slime. I was lying on a cold stone floor with the chill bite of a metal collar around my neck. My hands were bloody with fresh small cuts. I was chilled through and aching, with swollen eyes and bruises all over my body. Trivial injuries, but I cherished each one as a wrong done to me by my brother. All of this was my brother's fault, and now I hated my brother. In disdain, I peeled my awareness from his. He clutched at me, refusing to let me escape. I let him enjoy how I despised his weakness. None of his injuries would have disabled a warrior. The fool had endured far worse. His sense of injured self-righteousness weakened him. He was soft and as full of self-pity as a boil is full of pus.
I have suffered.
Somewhere he spoke the words aloud. He found my dismissal of his injuries insulting. So easy to distract him.
Vindalaya,
I heard someone plead.
Speak to me. What happened here?
His wrists were raw from shackles. I chose that pain and focused on it. His hands had little cuts all over them. I brought their stinging to his consciousness. I found an aching, loosened tooth and drove that pain to the front of his mind. He began to make helpless noises. I felt him flapping his hands, and as he paid more attention to his little pains, he built them up for himself. I suddenly snapped his jaws shut on his tongue, hard enough to bloody it. He gave a shriek, as much at my power over him as the pain. I wanted to do more. I wanted to kill him. I let him know that, and in his instant of panic, he pushed me away from him. I surged back into my own body and flung up my walls. Walls tight, body curled into a tight defensive ball. I was panting as if I'd completed an axe bout with Burrick.
Prince Fitzchivalry! Fitz! Fitz!
I opened my eyes to Brashen, crouched over me. Fear and relief warred on his face.
Are you all right?
In a lower voice.
What did Paragon do to you?
I was coiled in a ball on the deck. The strengthening day around us was warm, but my clothes were clammy and clung to me with cold sweat. Brashen held his hand out to me, and I clutched his forearm and pulled myself upright.
Not the ship,
I gasped. Something much darker and stronger.
Come to my stateroom. You look as if you could use a drink, and I've news.
I shook my head. I need to gather my friends. We must go ashore as soon as possible. Today I must find my child. They are going to kill her. He clapped a steadying hand to my shoulder.
Get control. You've had a terrible dream. You need to let go of it and face the day.
I started to shake free of his misplaced sympathy, but his next words froze me.
I've bad news for you, and it's all real. Amber is missing.
What? Overboard? He scowled.
Not in the way you think. We anchored late last night. Both Althea and I went to get some sleep. In the night, some of the crew took a ship's boat and went ashore, eager to see the town they'd heard tales about. Kennetson among them, and Boyo too.
He strangled and then swallowed his anger.
Did you know of that plan?
It was almost an accusation.
No.
And you think Amber went with them?
Yes. She who should have known better as much as Boyo. I am baffled, Fitzchivalry. They talk as if she instigated it. She went garbed as a common sailor, promising to show them the rowdiest tavern they could imagine,
food beyond compare, and with men and women trained to satisfy every appetite.
He shook his head.
Does that seem like her to you? To incite a mutiny on the eve of this rescue she claims is so important?
I heard Althea shouting orders, and Ant dashed past me, with Purr not far behind. I stepped out of the way and cut past Trell's confusion. How did she go missing?
The crew had agreed to return before dawn. When they gathered to leave, she could not be found. They searched. They returned a short time ago without her. I came to tell you, and found you here.
I realized the ship was in motion again. How dazed had I been as I sprawled on the deck? How long unaware? I rubbed my eyes roughly, scratched my face, and then gave my head a shake. None of it helped dispel the fog, and I suddenly recognized what I was feeling. The tea. He put it in the tea last night, I said.
What?
It doesn't matter. How quickly can I go ashore?
As soon as we anchor, we'll put a boat over the side for you.
He shook his head.
I'm angrier at my son than I've ever been. He claims his intention was to be sure they all returned, but he should have come to me. And Amber? I feel betrayed and yet full of fear for her, blind and alone. Why would she have wandered off?
I had a darker fear, that she had been recognized and taken. I don't know. I must get ashore as soon as possible.
I'll be glad to help you do that,
he said, and in his voice I heard his ardent wish to be done with me and all the trouble I'd brought aboard his vessel. I could not blame him. He strode away, and I was left trying to find my wits. I leaned on the railing and took deep breaths. It was all too much. The fool had drugged me last night, my fountaining joy at Nettle's news and my fear of the terrifying presence I had felt dimmed.
She planned this. She made it happen.
Paragon did not speak aloud. His message was a whisper in my mind.
Why? I do not know, but now I understand her tales from last night. Be careful, he charged me, and suddenly faded from my mind.
I felt nothing from the entity that had touched both of us, but tightened my walls anyway.
Vindelire. I knew his name now, and his touch, and he would die.
I had seen Purr. I discovered that Lant was part of the crew maneuvering the ship into the harbor. When I knocked loudly on the door of Amber's room, there was no response. I opened it to stillness. Spark was sprawled in her bunk. I shook her, and she lifted her head.
I feel terrible,
she slurred.
We were drugged by Amber, probably with a powder from my own kit.
I talked as I dressed in the prepared clothes. She swung her feet over the edge of the bunk and sat with her face buried in her hands.
Why?
Because she thinks she has a better chance to rescue B than I do.
What did she take?
Spark peered around groggily.
Not her granny disguise. The trousers I'd made for Purr. They'll be short on her. A hat.
She gestured at pots of cosmetics.
She disguised how pale she is.
She took a deeper breath and sat up straighter.
It's hard to tell. Some of your poisons, I think. One of mine. Is the butterfly cloak gone?
It was. Spark began going through an assortment of small packets next to her.
Fair maiden about to be wed.
Disguise. Did she take any of that?
Not that I can see.
She held out a hand to me. There was a pouch and a small paper.
Sindin or Karis seed? You get first choice.
I took the Karis seed. I well knew how that affected me. Where did you get this?
Karis seed from Shade. Sindin from Prince Kennetson.
I ransacked my memory. It gives stamina, may cause arousal in some, and may have bought a baby. She gave me a look.
He wanted to share it with me. I palmed it.
Nice fellow, I said, feeling strangely disappointed in him.
He is. He told me what it would do. We were both tired on the dog watch. It wasn't for romance, only for stamina.
Hmm.
I opened the pouch of Karis seed, gauged how much I needed, poured it into my hand, and tossed it into my mouth. I ground the small seed.